Hello, Bears fans, and welcome back to a brand new edition of Bears on Tap, official Chicago Bears podcast of your On Tap Sportsnet. Well, one of two, of course. We'll get into that, as always, at the end of the show. I am Ron Luce, joined by the one, the only, the greatest Twitter account on Twitter, Mr. Butkus Stats, Quentin. Q, how you doing, buddy? It's been a couple weeks since you and I have been on a microphone together.
Doing good, man. Just getting settled in and hoping to have all my moving done before the season starts. That's kind of my goal here.
I love it. It's starting to come together. It looks good. You got the old Butkus jersey in full frame.
Yes, sir.
That was
the best wedding gift I received.
Hey, and it's on brand too, right? I mean,
that's
the best thing that we got going, right? But Q, it's good to be back on a microphone with you, buddy. It's good to talk Bears football with you today. We're going to switch it up a little bit because you and I were talking pre-show, and it's every Bears show in the city is talking about the preseason game. And quite frankly, preseason game two has become preseason game four in my eyes of old, where it sucks. The starters don't play half the time.
Yeah.
You know, it's a competition of backups, which is still enticing, especially on a young team like the Bears. But I know you and I talked, and for me personally, outside of Mr. Bajent at quarterback, I don't have much else from the second game that we didn't probably address in some capacity when discussing the first game as well.
Man, so just hearing you say his name out loud, like I was watching while I was working the other day, I just had the CHGO show up because like it's just what came up on YouTube, and one of their hosts started singing the Secret Agent Man song.
I saw that.
Replacing Agent with Bajent. Now every time I hear his name, that's all I hear. It's awful.
Secret Agent Man. Yeah, fair. Fair. It's you know why? It's a catchy tune. That catchy tune will always get you if you're not careful. Always will get you if you're not careful. So
we know that if Bajent becomes a thing in Chicago officially, we know what his theme song is going to be.
Fact. Among probably multiple things, knowing Chicago and the chaotic people of Bears Twitter and Bears fandom, there's probably going to be numerous things for Mr. Bajent if he continues to stick Q. And I'm sure we're going to be in hot discussions about that probably on next week's show, as I believe it's, what, Tuesday that the 53-man needs to be finalized?
Yeah, I think that's right.
Okay, that's what I thought it is. So we'll probably be back on Tuesday. If I'm a guessing man, assuming we can swing it as a Bears on Tap crew, because we're going to have shit to talk about. And that is when then we can talk like preseason raw. Like you said, otherwise it sucks trying to talk preseason at this point in the game.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it's just like, you know, the preseason, not many guys have played anything meaningful aside from rookies, which, you know, you can talk about rookies all day. But and then, like, as you get into training camp stuff and training camp injuries, and like, we have no idea what any of these injuries are, how real they are. Like, half the time a guy goes on a cart, it's just because he twisted an ankle and the training staff doesn't want him to make it worse. They're like, just put him on a cart. It's, you know, 300 yards over to the training tent. So we'll put him on the cart and bring him over there. And then it gets tweeted out, XYZ was carted off the field. And it's like the worst case scenario is flying in everybody's heads, you know?
Yeah. I.e. the Cole Kmet situation of yesterday. And then he was back at practice today. So I agree with you, Q. It's hard to gauge it because guys will just naturally get rest, especially if they're veterans. You know, if they don't want to tweak something additionally, or maybe like you said, like, or maybe it is serious, but we really don't know until we kind of get to that 53-man portion of everything. And that's when, like, the full truth really starts to kind of come out. Dudes, what's up, Mr. Skokes? How are you, sir? But Q, you came up with a great topic for today's show. So why don't you introduce it to everybody that's listening and kind of what we're going to go through here?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, it's pretty simple. We're talking about the things that need to happen, the five things that need to happen for the Bears to be a playoff team this year. And I messaged Ron about this earlier today and was just like, I think doing something like this would be good. It's a little different. And my take on it was to think about, like, sit here and think, and maybe this speaks to the way my brain works, but like, of what could derail the Bears season, and like to try to go after those things of like the opposite of them. So I guess that makes me a pessimist for thinking that first. But
aren't we all though?
So we're just going to go 5-1. So we're going to start off with the guys who we think are fifth most important, and then getting down to one where we think the guy, like, that is the most important thing that needs to happen for the Bears to have a successful season. And most importantly, we cannot do Justin Fields. Because
yes,
if Justin Fields wins MVP, that's obviously going to be one, number one, right? Like,
absolutely. 100%.
They're going to make the playoffs if he wins MVP. Like, that's fact. Easy.
Yeah, absolutely. And that was a good kind of – it forced us to get creative, I think, by completely excluding Justin Fields from this. Because it's the most obvious, like, yes, of course, that is probably the number one factor that hinges on this 2023 Bears season is, what does Justin Fields do? Does he take that step forward? Does he hit that ascension? Or does he regress or not develop any further? And they go, you know, 6-11 and are at the drawing board again this offseason asking, you know, what are we going to do now? So love the idea. But Q, you mentioned you had an honorable mention. I also have an honorable mention. So it's technically top six, but it's top five with a little bonus juicy bit to start things off. So I'll let you lead it off, man. Who's your honorable mention right now for the Bears?
Honorable mention is Eddie Jackson coming off the Achilles injury. If Eddie Jackson can come back and be the same guy we saw last year before the injury, that's going to make a big difference for this team. Now, ultimately, the reason why I ended up taking him off is because his ability to impact games is somewhat affected, more so than some of these other players, on the guys around him and how they're performing. I mean, as we saw, you know, like 2019, 2020, Eddie Jackson lost a lot of that luster, and I'm not really sure he was playing all that differently. It was really just there were better options to throw at for quarterbacks, so they couldn't. The Bears defense couldn't funnel the ball towards him like they had previously. But I do think that he was last year still a special safety who showed just instincts out the wazoo, an ability to find the football and make plays on it in the right type of scheme. And if he is still, I mean, I think that there is a lot of optimism on that front because he is such an instinctual player. You know, he's not Derwin James out here who we're going like, this is the most athletic freak we've ever seen. And he is so good because of it. Not that Derwin James isn't good because of the mental side either, but like his athleticism means a lot. I'm not sure that's Eddie Jackson, the way Eddie Jackson plays the game.
Yeah, I was going to say Eddie Jackson is certainly a player that, like you said, kind of relies on that football instinct to just take over. Right. That ball. I feel like as a ball hawking safety, that's just kind of what it is. You're either a freak athlete, which to me was the Derwin Jameses in the old school days, the Brian Dawkins of the world. Right. Those guys that were just freak athletes. They played the position incredibly well. Obviously, they had football instinct. You don't play safety, you don't have football instinct. But then, like, when you think of those guys who are more that football instinct. Right. I think of Ed Reed. I think of Mike Brown. I think is a perfect example. And then I think of Eddie Jackson. So I completely agree with you there. Like that 49ers interception still lives in my memory just on repeat, because that to me, that was like the epitome of here's his ball hawking instinct, like on display for the world to see. And it was in week one against, you know, a very good 49ers team. Q, mine is a little different on the other side of the ball for my honorable mention. I was like, this guy could have a big impact. And then I thought of another player, and I was like, he's just on the outside of the bubble. And to me, that is Roschon Johnson. And I kind of labeled it as Roschon Johnson takes control. And I'm not saying he's going to take over and he's going to be the bell cow bat per se, but I think he eventually becomes the lead back. If he becomes the lead back because of that punching run style, and that can free up a guy like Herbert who's kind of got that burst, I think that is the best case scenario for the Bears. Because to me, Roschon Johnson might be a slightly faster in terms of breakaway speed version of David Montgomery. Like, they're very similar runners. Yeah. Roschon might be a little more punishing just because I think he's slightly bigger. Probably not by much, but again, nonetheless, I think Roschon Johnson is, you know, eventually taking somewhat control of the backfield, to me, is a big key that is going to help the Bears. If it's just the Khalil Herbert show this year, I still think the running game is effective, but to me, that could be the difference between 8 or 9 wins or maybe 10 or 11 wins.
Yeah, to your point of comparing Roschon with Montgomery, I think the thing that's like he is a little bigger, but really, I mean, Montgomery ran such a punishing style. Like, I don't think that that's a huge difference because I think they end up netting pretty even there. But the thing that stands out to me that's different with him is Montgomery was a zone runner, right? Like he wanted to be patient, he wanted to take his time and let it all play out. I think Roschon sees a hole and he's through it. Like he does not hesitate. He doesn't have that in his brain of like, I need to be patient and let this open up. It's like, there's the hole, I'm going through it, which is, you know, I can't actually sit here and say which one is better, but when your O-line isn't that good, I think being the more attacking running back is probably the better thing to be.
100%, 100% agreed. Q, you're number five.
All right. Number five, starting this off. And Bears are going to be given significant snaps to likely four rookies this year. So there are a few rookies on my list. And it starts off with the first round draft pick, Darnell Wright. I need Darnell Wright to, and I should start this off with saying rookie offensive tackles tend to be bad, right? They do not walk into the NFL and dominate. Tristan Wirfs is extremely rare, extremely,
Agreed.
extremely, extremely rare. So, like, even Penei Sewell had issues the first half of his rookie season. So, I don't need Darnell Wright to be good right away. What I need from him for the Bears to make the playoffs is to be getting better every week. That doesn't mean it needs to be linear, but I need him to be a better football player in December than he was in September. That right there, that, I mean, if it goes up, down, up, down, up, down, up, that's fine. That's what I'm looking for, right? That's I want to see something click at some point, and then it's just getting better every game from that point on. We saw it with Braxton Jones last year. The last five or six games, he really started to play well, but it was super up and down before that. So I need to see him catch his stride somewhere around mid-season, like week 10, week 11, even, and then it's all getting better from there, and the Bears finish the season strong.
Yeah, I mean, I love what you had to say there. Oops, sorry about that. Incredibly well put, right? About the rookie tackles. Tristan Wirfs is the anomaly. That almost never happens. You know, and it doesn't matter. Left tackle, right tackle, it doesn't matter. Tackle is a whole other beast in the NFL because you have no protection. You are truly on an island. And you know, we've discussed it on this show, right? The Mercedes Lewis signing, a guy that can line up next to, you know, right in a lot of either run schemes or even some pass schemes, can give you a little chip, can help out with the blocking. But I agree. I just that growth. You just want to see the growth at the end of the year, like you said, even if it's not linear, if it gets there and it's an improvement by year end from week one to week 17, that is absolutely key. And I agree with you there, Darnell Wright. Taking again, almost like what exactly what Braxton Jones went through a year ago, I think was an incredibly well put and perfect analogy for what could happen with Darnell Wright. Q, my number five, I'm going on the other side of the ball, but I am also going with a rookie, and I couldn't tell if it was rookie or rookies, and I was like, well, I like Zach Pickens. I like Zach Pickens a lot, and I was like, but to me, he's not the more important D tackle this season. For me, it's your boy, it's Jervon Dexter,
Swerving
and
with Jervin.
swerving with Jervin, and kind of almost on the same note though as what you said with Darnell Wright, right? At the end of the season, I want to see Dexter take those strides forward because I think right now we can all sit here and probably agree on the exact same things he needs to work on. He needs to play lower. He needs to be a little more aggressive with his hands. His get off is fine. I'm not worried about his get off. I think the preseason games have shown he has the get off. He's not the last guy off the ball every single time. He's getting there. The key for him
Sometimes
is,
he's the first.
yeah, I mean,
Opening
he's
snap of the week two preseason game, he was the first guy off that football.
yeah. So, you know, there to me, there's the bones are there for Dexter to become a meaningful game changer from the defensive tackle position. I'm in agreement with you. It doesn't need to be linear, but come week 17, I want to look back and be like, wow, Jerron Dexter is astronomically more improved than he was in week one against the Packers. If that happens, that's good for the Bears because that means you start to control the line of scrimmage in the run game. It means you get meaningful pressure in the passing game up the middle, which only helps your defensive ends. And at the end of the day, if they can control the line of scrimmage on the defensive side of the ball and those run those linebackers can run free, it's candy from there for the Chicago Bears defense.
Yeah. So Dexter's actually my number three. So I'll just go ahead and get him out of the way now. I mean, for a little bit, the reasoning is a little different, but you touched on it at the end there. I, as a rookie, as a raw rookie, I'm not expecting him to, you know, just become this game-changing force as a rookie. And that's, I'm not saying that you're expecting that either. But what I need to see is that his strength translates against NFL talent, and he still holds the ground that he held it similar in college against the run. Like, I need to know that he can be out there and be a difference maker in the run game. Because you do that, you start to say, well, we can play some Pickens next to him. We can, you know, play him alone with Justin Jones next to him. We don't need him with the nose tackle.
Andrew Billings.
Drawing a blank. Andrew Billings. We don't need him and Andrew Billings together because he can serve in the same role as Andrew Billings. Like, so being able to do that, I think it's going to, well, it's going to multiply your D-line combinations that you can throw out there and the different skill sets that you can play off of with guys out there. And he's not a Dexter. I don't think is a guy that you're worried about against the pass. Like he, not that he's an amazing pass rusher, but like the tools are there and you can trust that, you know, he can make an impact when, in a drop back. He doesn't need to play rundowns most of the time. Like a guy like Billings might, where it's like you're not sure if you want him out there on pass downs as a more traditional nose tackle. And really the big thing to me with it is you can't expect opponents to throw the football unless they have to. Like the Bears are going to be tested early and often. Can you stop the run? Because if you can't, why am I going to risk throwing to the secondary? Like, and I'll be honest, I recently, the last few weeks, I've been working on a power rankings for the NFL where I'm going like every position group across the NFL, ranking them. Like, we feel really good about our secondary, but I'll be honest, there's a lot of talent in the league at cornerback, a lot of talent. Oh, yeah. And I'm just not sure that the Bears room is proven yet to be on par with even NFL average there. Like, I love the talent they have, and I think it's going to in time be there, but there's a lot of really talented cornerback rooms in the NFL. And even with the, where the Bears have it, I'm kind of going off on a tangent here, so I'm going to try to reel it back in. You're but good. We got to, you need to be able to force teams to pass. Yeah. Like, Eddie Jackson's talented. They're not going to, why risk it? Like, if I'm an NFL offensive coordinator, why am I going to risk putting the ball in the air if I don't need to? It's Kyle Shanahan logic. Like, and half the league is coached by Kyle Shanahan disciples now. Like, I don't think teams are going to throw on you if they don't have to. So, and if Dexter isn't holding up and keeping the linebackers clean, that's what you mentioned at the end. That's a huge deal to me because Tremaine Edmonds is, I think, he's an outstanding football player, and he has the length to stack and shed, but it's never been something that he's excelled at. So if you start giving linemen free runs at him, I don't know how long you're going to last. So Dexter being able to hold up that front means a lot to me. I think it's going to mean a lot to the Bears' success.
Yeah, 100%. I completely agree with you there. Q, you're number four.
So at four, I've got another rookie out of Miami, Florida. I need Tyreek Stevenson to do two things. One, I need him to back up all this trash he's talking.
Fair.
Which I love, which I think is, I love that in a defensive back, but if you're going to talk, you got to back it up. And two, I need him to avoid penalties. He got a dumb penalty in the first quarter of the preseason game the other day. Like, I'm sure that they're, the team paid for it, but like, can't be having those penalties. And you need, if you're going to talk like this, you need to be able to back it up, because again, I need offenses putting the football where the Bears want them to, which is the middle of the field, right? Towards that ball hawking safety you have in Eddie Jackson, towards that super long Spider-Man-esque Tremaine Edmonds. I want the football going towards those spaces where I have players that I think could take it away. Kyler Gordon is another guy right there in the nickel. And the way to do that, the way that the Tampa 2 has always done that, is you're pressing receivers at the line of scrimmage and you're forcing them inside. You are not giving outside releases and you are forcing stuff towards the middle of the field. Force the action there. It's where the action's going to go. So Tyrique Stevenson, his physical presence, he's a physical player. He's big, he's strong, he's athletic. I need him bullying receivers towards the middle of the field. And again, you do that, I think you create more turnovers. I think turnovers lead to more wins, lead to the playoffs.
Yeah, incredibly well said. You know, I think, especially when you look on the other side of the field from him, right? Because Jalen Johnson has shown he can be that physical corner on the line of scrimmage and push guys inside. When you have that at both corner spots, like, you start to get flashbacks to the Bears of old, right? I mean, Charles Tillman was arguably the best Tampa 2 outside corner that has lived in the Chicago Bears lore because of that ability to get physical receivers at the line of scrimmage and force them inside. And I think that's why over the years you saw so many supporting corners with Tillman become successful, because you have that elite guy on one side of the ball, which in the Bears' case right now is Jalen Johnson. That second corner gets a lot of action then. Nathan Vasher was that way. Tim Jennings was that way. And that led to Pro Bowl nods for those guys, right? They got the recognition because of they stepped up and they played well when the game was coming at them. So just like you said, if Stevenson can push guys inside, keep the action in the middle, he's probably going to get rewarded more often than not with opportunities for takeovers on the outside as well. And that's just, again, turnovers.
Yeah.
See ball, get ball. And when you got the ball more than the other team, it usually leads to win. So I'm right there with you.
The best way to describe it is, you like in the Tampa 2, you're trying to squeeze the field, right? You're trying to shrink it down into a condensed area. And that's one of the reasons I think the staff covets length so much. Because if you shrink the field and all your guys are long, you're going to make plays.
Yeah, absolutely. Completely agree with you there, my friend. My number four, Mr. Quentin, is not a rookie. In fact, he's a very wily vet. But a guy that this Bears team needs to make an impact. And for me, it's Yannick Ngakoue. Yannick Ngakoue needs to not be the 8.5 sack guy per year that we've seen in the past. Don't get me wrong, I'm not going to be pissed off if he only has 8.5 sacks. But if this Bears team is going to make the playoffs, he needs to have the effect, not necessarily the numbers, but the effect of a 12 to 14 sack player on the outside. And he's done it. He's had a 12 sack season. It happened in his second year in Jacksonville. He's shown he can do double digit sacks. He has two seasons in his career of double digit sacks. And had he nine has, and a half last season.
If we're going by PFF rules, which there's no half sacks, there's only full sacks. He has a few more seasons like that. So he contributed quite a few half sacks in his career.
There you go. So a guy that has shown he can be a difference maker. The Bears need him to do that. And obviously, again, the beauty of football, right? We're sitting here calling out individual players, but you need units to work as a whole. And in the Bears case, right, we've both already called out a guy like Jervon Dexter, a player that if he is, especially on passing downs, giving the inside of the offensive line fits, Yannick Ngakoue is going to have more one-on-one opportunities on the outside. And then he needs to cash on said one-on-one opportunities. Even if he finishes with like a 10 and a half sack season, but again, has that impact of a 14 sack type player where he's just constantly in the quarterback's head because he's in the backfield. That's only going to benefit the Bears, because right now I think they're going to prove a lot of people wrong this year. Q as a defensive unit. I think they're going to stop the run. Maybe not top five in the league stop the run, but I think they're going to stop the run astronomically better than they did a season ago. They are going to force teams to throw the ball a little more on those third and six, third and sevens. Can Yannick Ngakoue get there and just cause havoc, especially when you got a team backed up in their own end? Because then that's great field position for your offense. And then in turn, if Justin Fields is, again, as we noted, right, having an elite season, it's going to lead to a lot of wins and probably the playoffs. So for me, it's Unique Ngakoue having, you know, a career-esque season in terms of effect, not necessarily numbers, but he needs to be that number one elite pass rusher for this Bears team.
Yeah. So why don't you, that was your number four, correct?
Yes, it was.
Why don't you give me your number three since I already talked Dexter then?
All right, we'll go back to back. I'm going to go back to a position that you just covered with Mr. Tyrique Stevenson. And I am going to highlight last year's top cornerback taken in the second round. I think Kyler Gordon needs to show the flashes we saw at the end of last season and become that true, not necessarily elite, but excellent corner that I think the Bears are anticipating him to become. Because like you noted, right, if Stevenson and Jalen are doing their jobs on the outside and they are performing the way a Tampa 2 corner should, they are pressing that action into the middle of the field. Kyler Gordon's going to get a lot of opportunities to take the ball away. And we've seen him be a difference maker, right? That first game of the season, he's flying around. He's creating what could have been a forced fumble. You know, he is a high-impact player right now for this team. I think just as a guy like I think Jaquan Brisker taking a step forward would be huge, and I don't have him on my list, admittedly. But to me, Gordon, because of being that slot corner, needs to take that second-year leap. And we saw a little bit of it. We started to get teased by it at the end of last season. Now, instead of a 5-game sample of that as a rookie, we need a 17-game sample of that now in his second year. So for me, Kyler Gordon taking that second-year leap is going to be incredibly beneficial for this Bears defense.
Yeah, I think that like, I'll be honest, that's one that I probably didn't give enough consideration to. But as I'm thinking about it here, I think it's a really good point. Like, and some of the things that you look at, they really coveted in Gordon with his body control and his balance and athleticism is something that I think is going to play really well in the slot. I think the entire idea behind targeting a guy with such strong body control where, you know, he did the martial arts and the dancing that we've all like read about that he's got to thank for those abilities. But like that stuff that really plays well in the nickel, and it's going to give him opportunities at the football.
Yeah, 100% indeed. As you noted, Q, your number three was Mr. Dexter. We've touched on him already. Yes. Your number two, my friend. Now we're getting into the juicy stuff. These are the big guns.
So this one, it was my number one at first. And then as I was, you know, I was walking to the bus from work. I was like, which is just so nice compared to living in Texas where you had to drive everywhere. But anyways, walking to the bus and just thinking, I was like, wait, I think this is number two. And it had been number one on my list the whole time I was thinking it through. But, and we'll get to number one and I'll discuss why I switched them. But number two, either Chase Claypool needs to bounce back to his first 2-year norms,
mm-hmm.
or DJ Moore has a Stephon Diggs type breakout when Stephon Diggs got to Buffalo.
We're on the same page, Q.
Yeah.
That was my number one, was DJ Moore. And that's the exact thing I have written here. DJ Moore takes Stephon Diggs' leap. Verbatim.
Yeah, I mean, if DJ Moore takes that leap, what Claypool does or doesn't do, I don't think that's going to be the difference in them making the playoffs. Like, mm-hmm. it can be the difference between them being an incredible offense versus a great offense. Like, if you look at, if you really dig into Josh Allen's career, best year of his career was when he had Stephon Diggs, Cole Beasley, mm-hmm. and Gabe Davis. He had three options who were outstanding. Like, when you have, and Cole Beasley was all pro that year. Like, don't get it mistaken. It's not Cole Beasley the rapper here. We're talking about all-pro Cole Beasley. So having three really good weapons just makes it infinitely harder on the defense to defend anything. But so that's why it's either or, though, because if DJ Moore plays like Stephon Diggs, then this offense is going to be good no matter what. Like, it might not be top of the best in the NFL good, but like I don't need it to be for them to make the playoffs. Yeah, it would just be a scary room to defend, and the O-line becomes much less of an issue when you have that type of weaponry.
Agreed, and especially from the Chase Claypool aspect of that, right? You know, because of his talent and because of the weapon he became, it wasn't necessarily the yards with Claypool. It was that touchdown ability, right? Finding the end zone, being that big body that they could trust in the red zone in Pittsburgh. And that's why he was able to accumulate and have those first two seasons that he did when with the Steelers. On the facet of Moore, though, because it was my number one point, is DJ Moore needs to take a Stephon Diggs leap. And because I was sitting here thinking about that, Q, almost just as you were on your walk to the bus, right? I was thinking about it a little bit earlier. I'm sitting on, you know, I'm sitting down here doing some things, and I'm like, I need to look at numbers. Like, that was my immediate thought. This is why Q and I are friends, folks, in case you didn't know. Q and I are both numbers guys at the heart of this thing. I was like, I got to look at the numbers. And so I pulled up DJ Moore's stats because I knew the general numbers. I wanted to see the exact numbers. Best career season, just short of 1,200 yards. And again, he was playing with me at quarterback in Carolina. Right. Like, he did not have an elite quarterback or even an elite arm talent of any kind when he was in Carolina. It was a very different situation his time with tenure with the Panthers. Sure, he had a little bit of Cam.
1 year with Cam Newton. It is exactly. A rookie year like that. It didn't really help him at all.
Exactly. So he's never really had that elite quarterback. But then I was like, that was the exact thought I had was, well, what did Stephon Diggs do in Minnesota before he went to Buffalo? Very similar eerie numbers, if you really look at it. And I got them in front of me here. The first 3 years in the league for Stephon Diggs, he only played 14 games and 13 games in those years. So some health issues kind of kept the numbers low. Best career year was 903 yards, 84 catches, and that was his second year in the league from 15 to 17. But 720 yards, 903 yards, 849 yards. But then once he was starting to be more healthy, playing 15 games per season in 18 and 19, 1,000 yards on 102 catches, 1,021 to be exact. And then on just 63 catches, 1,130 yards in that age 26 season in his last year in Minnesota. Very similar to the years that we've seen out of DJ Moore, right? 1,175 yards, 1,193 yards, 1,157 yards. Obviously a down year from
lower volume than,
right,
than most guys getting those yards.
Absolutely. So, you know, and then a down year in terms of yards for Moore last year, but Carolina was just an absolute shit show. But then the last 3 years now of Stephon Diggs in Buffalo as the lead guy, getting, you know, 160 or 155 plus targets a season, 1,535 yards, 1,225 yards, 1,429 yards. That 1,400 number for me, Q, is what I see with Moore. If he's getting 14 to 1,500 yards this season on 155 plus targets, which DJ Moore has only seen that number once in his career, and that was in 2021, he saw 163 targets. His next highest, 135 targets, and that was all the way back in 2019. If he's seeing 155 to 165 targets with the Bears this year, to me, DJ Moore is a 1,400-yard receiver. And if he does that, just like you said, that's a scary room to defend. And the Bears are probably in the postseason.
Yeah, I agree with you. And mine with ultimately my idea of either or with Claypool and him, it comes down to target share. Like if he's not getting those targets, someone else is, you know, and I think that would be Claypool. Yeah. So I can kick off number one here, and it is something that you've mentioned, but I didn't want to give number one early, so I held on to it. And ultimately, I mean, my reasoning for the wide receivers at two is, like, even if Claypool's subpar and Mooney is average for his career and Moore is average for his career, this is still going to be a quality wide receiver room, right? As long as these guys can hit, like, average of to even, like, slightly below average for what they've proven they are, you still feel decent about it. But at number one, I'm going on the edge. And Yannick Ngakoue, he's the name that stands out to me. He's the big sack guy that you got, the guy who's proven in this league that he's going to go get sacks. Maybe it ends up being Terrell Lewis, but ultimately Ngakoue is the guy that I'm thinking, because of that proven pedigree. But it's not about numbers. It's rare, right? It's almost always about numbers with me. But it's not about his pressure rate. It's not about his sack rate. It's about timing.
Mm.
I need, because he can go get 15 sacks. If they're Robert Quinn sacks in 2020, it's not going to make a big difference to me, right? Mm. Garbage time sacks will not do it for me. If they're Ngakoue's 4 sacks in 6 games with the Vikings, that doesn't move the needle for me, because those were all garbage. I think 3 of them came in 1 game, and it was like up big. It wasn't what giving the impact that the Bears need from the edge rusher, that from their sack man, their designated pass rusher on third down. So I need Ngakoue's pressure and sacks to come at the right place, right time. I need them to be impactful plays, because without them, I don't think the Bears, their defense might really struggle if they're not getting those pressures, those sacks in impactful spots. So ultimately that is why I had it number one, because I'm not comparing to the wide receivers. I'm not sure an average performance from him gets them over the hump, but the timing is everything. Sacks are such a weird stat. Sacks, if I'm being honest, sacks shouldn't even be a stat, because they don't, there's so much luck involved with each one. Like, pressures are much more steady year over year. A guy's ability to create pressure says a lot more than his ability to get sacks. Ngakoue sacks, they're just not always meaningful. So
yeah,
making them meaningful is the most important thing for the Bears to be successful this year, in my opinion.
Yeah, incredibly well said. And just to add on to that really quick, Q, a little bit of an example, right? If you're down 30 points to the Chiefs, and he gets 2 sacks in the fourth quarter, nobody gives a shit.
Right. Yeah.
But if the Bears are holding on to a 3-point lead and Kansas City's got the ball with 1 minute left and he gets a sack to force a fourth down, or a sack on fourth down to turn the ball over and the Bears win the game, like you said, it's that timing and nature of when even, those are coming.
It can even be a little less optimistic than that. Down by 4 with 5 minutes left in the fourth quarter. Sack is huge. Yeah. I could argue that there's not a bigger sack than that, because the sack, a sack leads to a punt, some, like, no matter what down it is, a sack leads to a punt something like 65% of the time. Like, it is an outrageous number. And it's like a sack is worth like half a turnover, it feels like, because of how much you're, I mean, obviously you have yard distances of like a punt versus a turnover that you're calculating in there. But like, as far as just the pure getting the ball back, a sack is almost as good as a turnover. Like, that is huge when you're talking about one score games in the fourth quarter.
Yeah. 100% agree with you there, Q. My number two point, since we already hit on DJ Moore, just real quick, this one to me, I think it plays into the Justin Fields card a lot.
Yeah.
And so maybe it's kind of good that we're talking about it here. Because again, we agreed, right? The most impactful thing of the season is Justin Fields. But to me, it's Cole Kmet. To me, it's Cole Kmet becoming that true safety blanket, right? Shit's hitting the fan. You know, he's getting pressured. You know, maybe it's a complex route, you know, a route. You know, like a complex route setup that's happening on a certain play. Maybe it's a double move. Maybe it's something that takes a little bit longer to come open, right? That you need that, you know, that 5 seconds of actual protection. Having a guy like Cole Kmet as that safety blanket in those instances where you know you can just give it to him and he can get you 6, 7, 8, 9 yards, 10 yards even, that's going to be important to me to Justin Fields. Because I think the one thing we as Bears fans saw a lot of last year was Justin Fields had no problem making the incredible throw. It was giving him the easy check down throws and going through his progression to understand, I'm defeated on this play. I don't have what I want in terms of what the play design was set up to do. Oh, here's Cole Kmet wide open for an 8-yard gain. Yeah. That's going to be why, to me, Cole Kmet's important. And again, why Cole Kmet got paid. right? You give a tight end big money like that because the tight end is always considered the safety blanket for the quarterback. And so that's why he was my number two coming into this thing. Then behind DJ Moore, having that Stephon Diggs like ascent as well. If they're going to get to the playoffs, like Cole Kmet needs to be a difference maker. And obviously he's not going to be the leading receiver on this team this year, like he was a year ago. That was just because the receiver room was the worst it's probably been in probably since Marcus Wheaton and Kendall Wright were the headliners of the group, maybe even worse than that, to be completely frank.
Yeah.
But now, I mean, so, you know, that's what Kmet needs to do is become that safety blanket.
I like that one because it's I'm trying to think of the way to word this. Like there are times when your receiving core is really talented, right? You don't need your tight end to be making these incredible plays. You need him to be nailing the details, right? Mm-hmm. You need him to be nailing the little things, getting everything right so that he is just forgotten about. And there are times where Kmet has really struggled with that. Like, mm-hmm. So I think that that is something that could go a real long way when you're talking about a really talented wide receiver room like this, where like him hitting it, just nailing all his P's and Q's, getting to the spot on time, hitting the block on time, getting off the block on time so that he's releasing into just a sea of nothing. Where he can run for days. Like we saw it once or twice last year where it worked perfectly, but there were quite a few times as I was like watching some of the tape this off season from him where it was questionable mm-hmm. whether he was hitting his spots on time, whether he was, it seemed like he was thinking too much sometimes. And tight end's a hard position. There's a lot of thought that goes into it. And there's a lot of deception in almost everything he is being asked to do. But fact. Being able to do those things, I think could be a big difference.
Yeah, and just kind of to add on to that, Q, because incredible point. I agree wholeheartedly. You know, it's tight end is a position of detail. It truthfully is because of, like you said, the amount of deception that comes at the position, the amount of reliability that is typically expected out of the tight end position. I think that's a large reason why you saw the offseason additions at the position that you did. Robert Tonyan and Mercedes Lewis know this offense better than just about anybody in terms of a tight end. What better guys to have in that room with an ascending Cole Kmet, a guy that you just paid to be a fixture in your organization for years and years to come? Why not give him a year with Robert Tonyan and Mercedes Lewis, who played in the system for a number of years in Green Bay, to say, hey, Cole, this is what you need to do on this play. Hey, Cole, this is what maybe you want to think about on plays like this when you see this happen. Having that full season of those kind of guys be A, I think it's also great having Robert Tonyan just as a weapon, right? I think Robert Tonyan, that's the type of guy that, like you said, right? The tight end kind of gets forgotten about when you have a really talented receiving core sometimes. I could see a lot of opportunities where Robert Tonyan gets forgot about because of even having Cole Kmet on the field, where Tonyan could take advantage of it down the seam and really create some opportunity. But having them mentally with Cole Kmet in that room for the entire season to me is why the Bears invested the extension in Cole Kmet that they did for 4 years, saying, look, this is your year to really buy in and understand the scheme. And we're going to give you two guys that know it better than just about anybody in the NFL. And they're going to compliment you as a full room for the year, but they're also going to teach you what you need to learn to take that next step as becoming what I would consider a top six tight end in the NFL. Truthfully, I think is what the Bears are hoping Cole Kmet can become.
Yeah.
In that same conversations with the Mark Andrews's and the Travis Kelce's of the world. And maybe not as good as those guys, but probably that next tier right behind them.
Like,
right.
Like Zach Ertz 3 years ago.
Yes.
Like that's perfect. That's the type of player you're looking for. I think.
Or
like
Dallas Goedert now.
Bigger version. Yeah.
Dallas Goedert. Dallas Goedert to me is like, if Cole Kmet became a Dallas Goedert-esque player, beautiful. That's fantastic. Cause then you have the Eagles offense. Because then you got your two really good receivers on the outside in theory. If Claypool or Mooney, whoever it is, takes that number two spot. And then you have a guy like Goddard as a weapon at the tight end position. And then you have that running back by committee. And then if you can build the offensive line, who knows? So I think that's why, you know, I think Kmet is an important part of this season that, like you said, right, there's still things he's learning. Especially with the system. Because he's new to it. Like, it was only his first year in the system last year, too. Because of what I think to me, the Shanahan inspired offense asks even more out of tight ends than your traditional NFL offense does. You look at San Francisco with George Kittle. You know, you look at what Robert Tonyan did for all those years in Green Bay.
There's so much detail with how much that they want to play off play action and play off, you know, run action. So not just the handoff, but the actual lineman's movements and the tight end's movements and the tight end's contact with the defenders, how much they want to use that to create open spaces is huge. Like, that's what Shanahan offenses are so fixated on, that aspect of misdirection. Like, they're going to have to, it's just a big part of what the Bears are going to do.
Absolutely. I completely agree with you, man. That was fun. That was different. And I'm good. Appreciate you coming up with that, sir. I think that was a lot of fun. And again, but I think in complete agreement, right? I think we both can confidently sit here and say, like, this Bears team is going to be better this year. This Bears team mostly rides on Justin Fields being an elite quarterback this season. Yeah. But if you get that ascension,
but there are things that are going to make that more or less likely.
Right. And exactly. And that's exactly where I was going with it, right? If DJ Moore has that kind of impact on the offense, if Claypool, if Komet, you know, defensively, if you're taking the ball away a lot and giving Justin more opportunities with the football to score, it all comes together. The beauty of football, the beauty of it being a team game. Everybody's got a role. Everybody's got something to do. But again, if guys are able to exceed expectation at their roles, that's what's the difference between an 8-9 win team on the cusp of a playoff position and maybe a 10-11 win team that's in a playoff position.
Yeah. Before we wrap up, I do have I wanted to get into the meat of what we were doing sooner than later in the show. But I do have some notes on the preseason game if we want to talk about
at all. Yeah, let's do it. Let's
on
chat.
Some players. I mean, so Roschon Johnson, really, I was impressed with his burst through the hole. I thought he looked very good from that aspect. Your guy, Bajan, he was the second highest graded player I had from the first half. But also, I did make a note. I didn't see him look at a second field. So I'm curious if that, you know, I mean, maybe it's pre-snap stuff. Maybe he's that advanced, or maybe he's just throwing straight to his first read. I don't know which. Zach Pickens looked impressive. Like, I was shocked at some of the plays that he made against the run. I didn't know that he had that in him. Larry Borum, I thought, put together some nice plays. Watching I just tend to look at the line more than anything else when I'm watching all 22. And
same.
Borum, I didn't have a negative play marked for him. There might have been one. You're trying to watch five guys at once. So you're not going to get them all the time. But, like, I had a mark for four plays that I thought were impressive plays. Mm-hmm. And it's going against second stringers for the most part. Maybe some third stringers. Like, so I'm not trying to put too much weight onto it. But Borum, I felt better about him as your swing tackle after watching that first half. Darius Fountain, I think, is making a case for the team, even if there's no roster room for it. Like, I don't know how you can manage that, but that's for next week's show. Baskerville showed some stuff to like. I noticed Terrell Lewis a handful of times getting a nice burst off the ball on third downs, on passing downs. I'm really excited about the idea of him. And then a few more. Ja'Tari Carter, I had the most – noticed plays from him, the most noticed positive plays, but also the second most noticed negative plays. Like, there's something there. It's just the fact of whether it gets developed. Like, I think that there's something there with that kid. He looks like he is. It's one of the weirdest things, but something I realized doing actually scouting the draft this year that is really, like, everyone has their own style of what they look for in football players, right? And some of it's hard to describe, but for me, a huge part of it is just aggression in the hands and willingness. Just the way you throw your hands at first contact says a lot to me about the player and the mindset. And he has it. I see it in spades with the way he throws his hands. So there's still a lot to learn from him, but I like it. And then on the other end of a very similar grade was Alex Leatherwood. But Alex Leatherwood has been in the league too long now and was too high of a draft pick to still be having those same issues. Like, if we're just sitting here grading the flashes, Alex Leatherwood looks like a guy. Like, you watch that tape and you're like, this guy's got an anchor. This guy's big. This guy's strong. And this guy doesn't know what he's doing. Like, and he should know by now. So, like, I'd be worried if you have to start Leatherwood, just because I'm not sure it's going to click mentally anytime soon. And last guy I was going to mention, let's see, we already talked about Dexter some, was Rasheem Green. I've written down here, who is 94? And then again, who is 94? I didn't know his number, but like, I was impressed by Rasheem Green's play. I don't think he's about to go become a Pro Bowl for you, but I feel better about the guy's ability to play significant snaps for you this year.
Yeah, I think one thing, just kind of overarching themes that to some of what you said, I think the defensive line as a whole, you see the depth. Like the depth is improved dramatically from a year ago. You know, they're actually going to have some hard decisions, I think, when it comes down to it on the defensive line of who to cut and who not to cut. And that's good. We want it to be a hard decision for Poles and company. That shows you have a plethora of talent in that room. And you know, the one thing I really did like about Bajent, and I know it's one play, but it's something that just it showed how much college football he played. Because he was a 4-year starter in college at D2 Shepherd. Like he played a lot of ball. Like there's a reason he's got all the records at D2, is because he played for so long. He played like what, 52 games or something crazy shit like that? That's a lot of college games. Like most guys get half of that coming into the NFL, and he had 52 college games. But friend of the program, we can call him friend of the program now. Big friend of the program, Mr. Robert Schmitz, put out a great video just highlighting the screen to Pettis, and just again, because rookie quarterbacks to me, an undrafted rookie quarterback would you know put out and on the you know on the hard count and might not see that corner jumping, or if he does, not keep his cool and be like, oh shit, what am I gonna do here, and maybe almost do too much, right? He sees the corner creep in off the slot for the blitz and just looks over at Pettis and goes, and Pettis goes, and they know exactly what the call is. They're on the same page. And sure, it's a 5-yard play, but that could have gone absolutely the complete opposite direction with an undrafted free agent rookie quarterback, right? So the fact that he just the presence of mind, the cool, calm collectiveness to see that, all right, check, check, here we go, no problem. Bring your blitz. I don't really give a shit. Bring it, because it's not going to matter. And it's exactly what it was. They say, we'll take the positive play. Thanks for giving us a free cheese. Throws the dart to Pettis. Pettis makes a nice play because the blocks weren't right quite there, but makes a nice play, gets inside, gets you 5 yards on the play, and you know, you live to see another day. So again, not the impressive 40-yard touchdown or threading the needle on the throw, but it's the read and recognition, I think, for me. It's the cool and you know, that poised nature. Just he's seen it before. He's played enough football. He's seen that shit before. It's that in-game experience that he gets. Sure, it's at D2, but it's that in-game experience that I think is why Bajent, to me, is such kind of an anomaly as a rookie undrafted quarterback. Because most of these guys come in and they're like everybody else. Oh, I've got 13 games as a starter. I've got 20 games as a starter at the college level. 52 games is a lot of football. I don't think I played 52 games in my entire football life, let alone college life. Like this guy was just racking in those reps. He's seen everything that a team can throw at you as a quarterback. And for that, like to me, it was the small things, I think, that made that impressive for me.
Yeah, it's moxie. Kids got
Yes.
moxie
Well put.
in
Absolutely.
spades. And I heard, I forget what podcast it was I was listening to, but they had his college coach on, and we're asking him some questions, and he was like, or it was maybe a college coach, maybe not the head coach or someone associate, maybe it was the athletic director, it was something like that. But he was saying, like, yeah, D1 schools were offering him to transfer, but he wanted to graduate. And that's something that you forget about a lot too. Like some of these guys, you know, they don't know if they have a job at the next level, and they got to get that degree. It's kind of, it can be hard to transfer all your credits over and still graduate. Like, you're going to lose credits when you transfer. That's just kind of the way it goes. But one last guy I wanted to say, not want to say, but have to say, Doug Kramer had a rough day. And I don't know what the answer is at center, if they need a center, but I'm worried if it's Doug Kramer.
Yeah, that's fair. And that's something I've been thinking a lot about, Q, is as the 53 mans are coming in and we're going to start seeing the cuts and the waivers and everything like that. My hunch tells me the Bears are going to be very active again on the waiver wire like they were a year ago. Maybe not to the same extent where they're bringing in like 8 players or whatever it was a season ago. But I think you're going to see some interior offensive linemen come in as a part of that. A, for depth, especially at the guard position, right? Like, you have Carter, but Leatherwood's nothing special, in my opinion. Patrick's banged up. Whitehair's banged up. Jenkins is a walking injury. Like, to me, interior offensive line as a whole is going to be something that they are going to really have to just, you know, they're gonna have to get something there. So, in agreement with you there. The interior offensive line, I'm not so worried about the tackles. I know Darnell Wright's going to go through his growing pains, but, like, he'll be an improvement over Riley Reiff from a year ago.
No, Larry Borum is a fine swing tackle in the league. Yeah. Like, you feel just fine about him as, like, when you're thinking about relative to what the rest of the league has at swing tackle, it's about par for the course.
Yeah, 100%. A fun comment here from Thomas Gage. He says, I asked TJ, I think JT, right? JT O'Sullivan does the QB school. He says, I asked JT about Bajet back when we signed him, and he said he had no clue who that is, and now today he releases a video gushing over him. Yeah, I haven't watched the video, but I saw the release. I like JT O'Sullivan's stuff a lot. It's fun to watch. It's just I'm such a sucker for – I call it football porn. Like, I'm a sucker. Yeah. Breakdown tape for me. I'm a sucker for it. Like, I'll watch it, and I'll absorb it, and it just – to me, that just tickles – it scratches that itch. You know what I mean? Yeah. But, Absolutely. Yeah, I mean, it just kind of shows, right? Like, Bajent really was a guy that's kind of come out of nowhere. And he's been a refreshing surprise. Again, I don't think he's going to be your number two quarterback when this is all said and done. I still think P.J. Walker ultimately gets the first crack at it. But now with that third third emergency quarterback spot that's kind of been instituted now because of the San Francisco 49ers, there's a very good possibility that Bajent beats out Peterman for that. Yeah. Right. And, you know, I saw something that made an interesting point even with him is even if they kept Peterman as that third, it was interesting enough because they said, well, Bajan's probably not going to go somewhere else this year and get signed to the active roster if he doesn't know the system. So this is the year if you're going to sneak him through on the practice squad, you do it. Like, this is the year where you probably can get away with that with a guy like Bajet. And then next
Getsy
year,
he isn't a coach someplace else, or like Janoco didn't leave to be an OC somewhere. Or, you know, there's not another coach who's saying, this guy can do it. I know
he can. Yeah. He can run my system because it's similar to what he would be doing with the Bears. Exactly. So I think this is the year where they can get away with putting him on the practice squad. And then with next year in mind, either A, he's the backup, maybe, if they really feel good about his development. Or B, maybe he is that third emergency quarterback going into next season with then maybe, you know, 2 years out from now, he's your number two. A nice cheap option, a guy that was an undrafted free agent, a good story. Yeah. And who knows? Maybe, you know, he if injuries happen to Fields, he comes in, he gives you a couple of decent looks. He's a guy we could see leave the Bears because somebody wants to pay him and give him a chance at quarterback. Like, who knows? But he's been a fun story, I think, from the preseason to follow so far, Q. And I love all your thoughts. I always appreciate your football insight when you watch film. So I'm glad you were able to share some notes with us. One quick thing that I actually do want to talk to you about before we fully wrap this thing up here. It's still preseason related. Starters are playing for the Bears on Saturday against the Bills. That's Soldier Field. They haven't announced yet what the expected timing is for the starters yet. Supposedly there is a meeting, or there was a meeting maybe today, I think it was, at 1:45, they were saying that the offensive staff was going to get together and kind of discuss number of plays or number of drives or things like that, that they're going to play the starters. What is your thoughts just coming into Saturday? Are you a little nervous? Because I'm a little nervous.
No, I'm really not. I mean, you want to get some live reps with a center who's not Cody Whitehair. Understandable. You want to get some more live throws on screen passes. I think the Bears are going to throw a lot of screen passes this year. So you want to get any jitters out from, being in front of a crowd while throwing short. That makes sense to me. I don't think you're going to see Fields take more than a three-step drop at all. I mean, I don't think, I think it's all going to be very basic unless, a lineman just falls down at the snap and gives a free rush to a guy. Like, I don't think you're going to see like rookie Fields getting wrecked by a free runner because he just didn't process it because he's a rookie who's never seen it that look before. Like you're just, it's all gonna be very safe stuff. It doesn't make me very nervous. I mean, I don't think that there's really a whole lot you can even take away from it unless the offense is just in complete disarray. Like unless the O-line is just constantly jumping or like, I mean, it's getting jitters out. It's getting live reps in front of a crowd of just snap, drop, throw, feel the whole thing, get through it, work through the whole progression, like, and just doing something. Like, think about it this way. Anyone who's a golfer out there, hitting off a tee box with no one watching is one thing. Hitting off a tee box when there's three groups of carts behind you watching you hit is all completely. Now think about that with a 50,000 person stadium.
That's incredibly well put. Like I'm mentally thinking about I hate hitting off the tee box when people are watching me. So like completely that analogy hits home for me. No, well put, Q. I'm interested to see. Like, I think for me, it's like I'm interested to see how many starters on the offensive line actually play. I think that's part of it. And just again, just getting a feel for what, because again, we're not going to know what this offense actually is until September 10th. Like, let's just call it what it is. But at least if you can get a little bit, just a little bit, on Saturday, just a little bit. Like that's kind of what I'm hoping for. So I'm right there with you. A couple quick comments here, Q, before we start to wrap this thing up. Mr. Gage back here in the comments again. He says, you don't expose a confident rookie to QB to waivers. He says he thinks he has a chance to leapfrog Walker if he shows enough in this next game. Fair. Hey, I'm all for it. He says, expose Peterman. No one's going to claim him. Bajent will be claimed. Imagine a team like the Packers signing Bajent and him end up being imagine him up surprising love and terrorizing the Bears for a decade. I couldn't with the skull. Fair. No, oh, very fair.
And that would be so insulting.
It really would. It really would. It's almost as bad as seeing Jim McMahon put on Packers colors. Like it's just.
I'd cry on air. Like the second we lost in Bajent, I'd break down.
Like this is how it ends. This is how it ends. No, I'm there with you. And a good point, Thomas. So maybe they do. Maybe they have enough confidence to say, hey, he's our third quarterback. He's our emergency guy. We'll keep Peterman on the practice squad. Because I agree, they snuck Peterman through on the practice squad last year. Keep him there. You have that four QB depth in terms of that nature. And then you run it and just see what happens, man. But I'm Q, you know why I'm excited for this preseason game?
Why is that?
Because it's the last one.
Yeah.
Like football's absolutely. Almost here. That's I why know. I'm excited.
This is like the longest 2 weeks of the year.
Oh, it's awful. Absolutely awful. Like I'm not trying to wish August away because it's still summer and I'm over at Cubs on Tap. So like baseball is still in full swing. I think the Cubbies are actually winning for those that care. It's just like, but like September 10th is gonna be fantastic. Like I'm so excited. I can't wait. I'm ready. I'm fully ready, and it's going to be a good time. Q, any quick final thoughts before we shut this thing down?
No, I think that wraps it for me. I think I got it all out.
I love that. It's such a good feeling when you get everything out. And you don't like we don't sign off and you go, shit, I wanted to say that. Like that's always the worst feeling in the world. So I'm right there with you, man. I also feel good. Just kind of little programming notes for everybody. We'll be back again next week, as we noted, aiming for Tuesday 100%. 53-man roster. We'll talk about it. We'll say what this team is looking like. Hopefully we can get the three panel crew here with myself and Q and also Juice. But nonetheless, a show will be a show, and we will see you guys next week. And then the next time we talk to you guys, it's going to be game week. And that's just uber exciting. A little programming note, because again, as we always note, Bears on Tap, one of two Bears podcasts here at the On Tap Sports Network covering the Chicago Bears. Our friends over at the Bears Nations podcast do a very traditional Monday morning, or, you know, they do a Monday, you know, wrap up show, you know, recapping the game on Sunday. And then they do a Wednesday preview show. So we encourage you to go check them out. They're at Bears Nation Pod on all social media, including Twitch. They're all over there as well. They go live right here from our YouTube channel in addition. So be sure to follow them and get those thoughts from game to game from a pure recap and preview perspective. We're going to bring you a little bit of a different taste here at Bears on Tap this year. We're still going to talk about the game. It's still going to be relevant to what's happening that week in Chicago Bears, you know, football. But we're going to tailor it a little bit. Maybe there are some more debates, or maybe it's going to be a little more focused in on a certain player or a certain set of plays or things like that. So we're going to get creative with it this year. It's going to be a lot of fun. I know I'm excited for it. I hope Q, you are as well. I know Juice is also ready. And we're just ready to talk some Bears football, man. That's just what it is. That is just what it is.
Absolutely.
Q, before we get out of here, again, reminding everybody, one of two Bears podcasts here. We are Bears on Tap. You know the drill at Bears Nation Pod. We are at Bears on Tap on the X app. Again, subscribe to the YouTube. Hit the like button as well. Hit the little bell. That way you know when all of our great shows go live right here at the On Tap Sports Network. We got all of your sports covered here. Cubs, Sox, Bears, Bulls, Blackhawks, the whole nine. OnTapSports.com, at OnTapSports on social media, the OnTap Sports Network. Go and check out what's on tap in Chicago sports. Q, thank you, sir, as always, for jumping on and joining me. Thank you for the great idea. Thought it generated a great conversation for today's show. It was the keys the Bears need to make the playoffs. A little bit of preseason talk as well. Next time we're back, we are focused on the regular season, roster decisions, and then it's week one, baby. And I know, Q, you're ready. I'm ready. And then we're all ready here. So, Q, what do you say, buddy? We got it here. The only way we know, a Bears on Tap. Bear down.
Bear down.